Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon. Thanks so much for subscribing and downloading. If you haven't yet done so, please rate and review, and also share with friends and family. On this episode, I had the chance to talk with Kim Nolder. She shares her journey with breast cancer at the age of 39 years old. Kim talked about being hypervigilant with her health after losing her mom to breast cancer. Kim went in for a baseline mammogram and came out with a diagnosis of cancer. Take a listen in as she shares her story. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. I'm here with Kim Nolder, and I know Kim from actually our time in Pittsburgh. We had an association through the local school district. So welcome, Kim. I'm thankful that you're here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about your breast cancer diagnosis. So I know that you were diagnosed in January of 2014, and you were diagnosed with DCIS, which is the ductal carcinoma in situ, which was throughout your breast. So that made you a stage zero. So tell me a little bit about your diagnosis. Like, how old were you when you were diagnosed? How did you even find it? Was it a typical mammogram? What were you doing?
So I've always kind of been on top of breast health because my mom had breast cancer and passed away at the age of 60 from it. So when we had our kids, I always, talked about what was going on and did I need to do anything early and things like that. And at 39, my doctor agreed that I could go a year early to get a mammogram. I had just finished breastfeeding my youngest son, and she said I needed to wait 6 months. So waited 6 months, which was Christmas time, and she said, you know what, give yourself a little break, go after the holidays. Happened to call that week, and they said, you know what, it's a snowstorm outside that's coming and nobody wants to come in today and everybody's canceling. Would you like to come in? And I said, sure. So that was like January 2nd, I think, of that year, and went down and they found it in my first mammogram. And that was supposed to be my baseline going forward, but they called me back to have a second, which my sister, who is older than I am, has had to do before, so I assumed we were going to do like an ultrasound or something like that, and they said no. They just wanted to do one side, and they did. I had done a 3D mammogram at the beginning, and they decided they wanted to do just a traditional, and everybody else in the waiting room was kind of being told they could leave, and I sat around and waited, and they said that the radiologist wanted to actually talk to me, and I knew that couldn't be good news.
Yes.
So my breast cancer was on the left side, same as my mom's, and that's kind of how things started out that year of 2014. So wasn't a great way to kick off the New Year's, but
no,
I'm glad those people canceled, and I'm glad the snowstorm was there because it got me in.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely worked out in your favor, for sure.
Absolutely.
Because I know that it's not always easy to get in for those initial assessments,
right.
And many times people have to wait a couple of weeks to get in, so I'm glad you were able to do that. So, because your mom had breast cancer, you had said that they were like, okay, it's fine to go a year ahead of schedule. So typically the recommendation is at 40 years. How many years are there between you and your sister?
So my sister's 11 years older than I am.
Okay.
So she had been going for a while. And we actually, when I went to the oncologist, I was given the option I could do radiation and a lumpectomy, or she was willing to do a single mastectomy. I guess because the way I presented to her and because I had always said that if anything ever came up in them, I would not want to keep them. I'd want to do a mastectomy. And I was pretty straightforward with that with the doctor. And I said, would you be willing to take both? And she kind of looked over my records and she said, yes, based on family history and how my current age and all that good stuff. She offered to do BRCA testing before I made the decision. I agreed to do some BRCA testing because I wanted to help my nieces and my sister.
So is there a genetic mutation?
So there is.
Okay.
So the BRCA, I agreed to do it, but it wasn't going to change my mind. We went ahead and scheduled the surgeries. And I said, we can do the BRCA testing, but no matter what it comes back, this is my decision. And I want to do the double mastectomy, even if it comes back that there is no BRCA link. Right. And there is a BRCA link. My dad eventually got tested as well, because obviously my mother's not with us anymore to be tested. He got tested and it came back that he did not carry it.
Okay.
And in doing some of my own research, we found out that my mom's probably started about the same age. Hmm. And because of when she was diagnosed, that would have been, 25 years ago or more, that they didn't have the technology they have today to find it when it was smaller.
Right.
So had they had today's technology, she would still be with us. So, yeah.
And then did your sister also get tested?
Yes. So my sister got tested and she tested negative. So that did not impact any of her children.
Right.
My brother opted not to get tested. He chose not to. However, his daughters have all, my nieces on that side, all have the information that they need as far as what exact gene it is that is the problem and where that mutation sits. They also will start getting mammograms at 29.
Okay.
Instead of 40, because it's 10 years
right.
before I was diagnosed. And then on my mom's side of the family, both daughters carry, and one daughter has had a single mastectomy from cancer as well. So it's definitely a hereditary link on that side. Yeah. So my running joke for my family is I may look nothing like my mother and look exactly like my father. However, I definitely carry her genes inside of me because I definitely have that and that definitely came from her side. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, so there was one thing that you mentioned though, which was you did it for your nieces. And
right.
So I think there always tends to be a misconception
yes.
that it only gets exactly. passed on to girls.
Right.
And you have three little boys.
I've got three boys. And the interesting thing at that point in time, I did it for my nieces because I didn't know any better. I didn't think of male breast cancer. I thought of that as the breast cancer gene. However, the BRCA2 gene, which I carry, impacts ovarian, prostate, pancreatic, and breast. And so that puts them at a higher risk for that pancreatic and prostate.
Absolutely.
So they aren't, I don't believe they will be tested. I believe they get tested the same time frame that you would test if I had a girl. So they wait until after they've completed puberty.
Okay.
To test them as well. That's how they, at least that was at the time when I looked up the latest recommendation was to wait till puberty had completed. So I have a little bit more time before we get through that with my oldest.
Right.
And then we'll have to broach that subject with him and see what we do want to do. It would just mean additional testing for him. For me, the only thing I'm still at high risk for is pancreatic mm-hmm. because I opted almost exactly 30 days after I had my double mastectomy, I had a full hysterectomy done.
Right.
So
I'm going to kind of pop back over. I certainly want to talk about your course of treatment, and we've touched on it a little bit. But so in terms of, really approaching that with your children, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, obviously it kind of sounds like you haven't had any discussion. How old is your oldest at this point?
So my oldest just turned 13.
Okay, so he's going to be starting puberty stage.
Yeah, so he's just, unfortunately, I don't want to announce this on a podcast, but unfortunately, yes, we've just started to venture into that realm with him. But, you know, none of my children know my diagnosis and what my diagnosis was at that point in time. The only thing that they knew at the time 5 years ago was that breast cancer is what caused their grandmother not to be here.
Okay.
So that was their only association with it, which wasn't a positive.
Right.
They were so young. My youngest when I was going through this was 2. Okay. So the knowledge and the ability to comprehend what was going on was not going to be there for him. So we opted to just say that, and because I didn't have to do any radiation, I didn't have to do any chemo afterwards, I didn't have to do any follow-up, we opted to explain to them, you know, that they knew that their grandmother, Nunny, had a problem and that her, we call them Nunnies, your boobs, that her breast had caused her to be sick, and that mommy didn't want to have that happen. And so I was doing this so that I could stay healthy.
Okay.
Which ultimately was pretty much why I chose to do what I was choosing to do, because I didn't want it to recur.
Sure.
And at that point in time, it was stage 0, and you know, I had no lymphatic involvement, and so that's pretty much the way we've handled it now. I think my oldest has an idea simply because he's heard us talking enough to know.
Right.
And everything, but hasn't really said anything. If he came out and asked me, I'm sure I would tell him the truth, and he's old enough now to know that, and understand it and know what it means. And I've been here for 5 years since then.
Right.
So
you kind of have that feeling that initially it would have really just been hard for them to understand that there would be a possibility of survival because their first experience was not so positive.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was their only experience with it was knowing that she's not here. And that's why.
Yeah. And I would imagine that conversation, as the time gets closer to, you know, when your oldest is able to get tested, will be kind of a difficult conversation to have. Do you think that at that point you will, if he does not ask you prior to then, do you think at that point you will share with him that, yes, you had a diagnosis? Okay.
Yes. Yes, I will. And actually, I just went through, I just had an implant exchange done because I had the textured implants. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go through all of that and opted to change them out before I had any symptoms or before there was any problems with them. So I tend to be proactive. I'd rather be in control of the situation and be in control of when it happens and how it happens than wait until, you know, I had some swelling or something like that come up. So, I definitely think that conversation will happen. I know that they know about it. I know that they know I just underwent the surgery, you know, about back in April. So they're aware that it's something that I still have to work with. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes as time goes on with them.
For sure. So you talked a little bit about you had the bilateral mastectomy, you did not have to do any of the radiation or the chemotherapy, you did opt to have the hysterectomy. Was the hysterectomy a result of having the BRCA2 mutation, or was it in combination of, like, were you also estrogen progesterone positive?
So I was estrogen positive.
Okay.
And I actually had some blood work done that I was supposed to. It was kind of ironic how it happened. But I actually had some blood work done. I guess like it was supposed to be done going into surgery for the double mastectomy, but it ended up not, they didn't do it because it wasn't in the chart. So they did it after. And some of the CA9 that does, that does whether or not you're showing signs of ovarian cancer. I want to say it's,
I think it's the CA125.
125. Yeah, there you go. So that came up a little bit higher than it should have been. And that's what prompted us to do it faster. So I actually had my gynecological oncology visit the morning of my double mastectomy.
Oh, wow.
So I went in and I was in Pittsburgh. I went to McGee and I just said, you know, we have to be here at noon anyways. What do you have in the morning? Might as well make a day of it. Can't eat, can't do anything else.
What else are you going to do? Go see another doctor.
What else am I going to do but worry about what's going to happen at noon? So I might as well have something else to take my mind off of it.
Yeah.
So that's what prompted me to do it so quickly. If it hadn't been elevated, I probably would have waited a little bit before doing it. But that's what prompted me to move forward with doing it quickly.
Fair enough. I mean, you're kind of in that position where you've got to, you know, start making decisions. And, you know, you said you have, you know, three young kids that you have to take care of and wanted to make sure that you were there for them. So,
absolutely.
So then I believe I recall hearing you talking at some point in time about doing physical therapy though. So
I immediately went, within probably 2 or 3 days of having my double mastectomy, I immediately went over and started having lymphatic massage. So I started that therapy almost immediately. And then from there moved over to physical therapy and started that shortly, I want to say within a month or so. And I did physical therapy to reset my core from having the hysterectomy and to work on my arms and strength and movement ability and stretching and all that kind of stuff. So because I had the textured implants that were shaped, they were under my pec muscles. So I had a lot of tightness and a lot of spasming from that initially.
Right.
And the physical therapy really helped a ton with that and helped get things back in to shape and stretch things out. And actually, ironically, I just came home this afternoon from doing physical therapy after having them replaced.
Right. I did see that.
Because
I was creeping on Facebook.
Yeah. Creeping around. That's not really creeping because we're
not
friends
really
on Facebook.
That's true. But
it seems to be my left arm just doesn't want to cooperate and do what it's supposed to do. So went in and had some physical therapy kind of consultation and so hopefully that'll be bad. It's you know, for some people it probably would be good, but for me it's just not there yet. It needs some help and needs to get full range of motion so I can swim and things like that again.
And so are you taking any kind of medication?
No,
they didn't.
I'm not.
Okay.
No, I don't have to take, that was one of the, I don't want to say benefits of doing double mastectomy because there's never a benefit to doing, to doing a mastectomy. But, one of the reasons, that I opted to do both was it was done. It was, you did the surgery and you were, and there was no additional medication needed, no additional therapies needed, no additional anything like that that was necessary. So I get followed now just by a regular OBGYN.
Okay.
There's no daily medication. I remember my mom taking it and not liking it and it having not so great side effects. So that was a big influencer, I think, in my mind as to why I always said, you know, And my saying when I was going through it was, you know, if they're not behaving, just like the queen, off with their heads, you know, so they're not behaving. So,
yeah,
you know, they don't need to be there anymore then. Right. And that was kind of my theory through it and how I kind of worked through it.
Okay. So are you getting, are you getting mammogram or not mammogram? Sorry. You don't want that. Are you getting MRIs at least as well? No. Okay.
No, no, because it was stage zero.
Okay.
They didn't feel that I needed to do any of that. I have the option to do them on my pancreas. So they have some baselines and can't catch anything because that's another silent one.
Right.
So we have that piece to kind of compare to and work from and see if anything's going on with. But other than that, no, and they were, you know, it's funny because you always wonder what's going on. And that was another reason why I decided to do the mastectomy because I'm not patient. Like that's my biggest downfall. I'm the least patient person in the whole wide world. And, I knew knowing there was something going on and not being able to know what it was or wondering if something was going on, I wouldn't have the patience to wait and find out if something was going on. So just not having them there at all kind of gave me a little bit of reinsurance.
Yeah. But at least you know that about yourself, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, don't set yourself up for being in a position where.
Yeah. And I am the first person. We just bought a house. And the first thing I told to the person that was doing our loan or to our mortgage broker was I am the least patient person in the world. So don't get offended when I call you in the morning and don't hear from you in the afternoon and send you a text message. I'm just not patient. It's just who I am. I'm not upset. I'm not, you know, I'm just not very patient when it comes to things like that. Put a 2-year-old in front of me and I'm great. But when it comes to adults, things, I have no patience whatsoever. So, you know, I had talked to a friend who had had breast cancer when I went through this, and she had had it right before I did. And she said, you know, her biggest thing is she is always worried, is there something else going on?
Right.
Is there something else going on? Because she had the lumpectomy and she always wonders, is there something, is it coming back? Is it back? I mean, I still have that risk with the chest wall piece being there, but the fact that we got it so early, and there were several, I'm glad I did do the double mastectomy because there were several spots on my right side as well that were pre-cancerous that would have ended up, you know, developing. It would have been every couple of years, I probably would have been going in to get another lumpectomy and more radiation.
So have you done the screening for pancreatic? I heard you say that you have the choice to do it. Have you actually done the pancreatic screenings yet?
Oh, I have not. Okay. So in Pittsburgh, it was offered to me and I didn't get a chance to do it before we moved. And now we're in North Carolina. So I'm working on the doctors down here to agree to do it just because down here it's I'm not going through like a LiveWell center. Like I was in Pittsburgh. And so it just doesn't seem to be a priority like it was in Pittsburgh. So I'm just trying to navigate through finding someone who would agree to doing the scan and that it would be worthwhile to do and worthwhile to check things out and just make sure everything's good.
Absolutely.
And okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I feel like, you know, it's sometimes we just have to be that squeaky wheel. You know, sometimes the doctors don't necessarily listen to us. And I don't mean to say that, you know, in a negative way, but and it's not all doctors. It's, you know, some doctors, but we really do need to advocate for our own needs. So I hope that you're able to get that scan done. So at least you do have that baseline.
Yeah. Well, and you know, now's always the perfect time to do it because you've met all your deductibles and you're out of pockets and all that kind of good stuff from the first surgery. You might as well, you know, take advantage of all that money you put towards insurance.
And all of that insurance
and
stuff.
Use it all. Yeah. And use it all to your benefit.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
For sure.
Now, but do you get bone scans then? Because you've had a hysterectomy? Okay. You're at least doing that.
So I get bone density scans, which have always come out fine. I do the bone density scans, and they haven't really come up marked, you know, high or anything like that. I kind of watch calcium. I watch vitamin D's. I watch all that kind of stuff. I'm kind of hyper vigilant about blood work.
Okay.
And just kind of monitoring all my vitamin levels and watching what those all are doing. And actually recently started talking to a nutritionist to find out if there's some things that I need to be doing there, because I was seeing one in Pittsburgh and kind of laid off of that for a while. So glad to have found someone here.
Yeah,
that,
for
that
sure.
That makes sense, because nutrition, you know, plays a big part in it, and how healthy you are and how resilient you are to things. So,
right.
Yeah. For sure.
And it's all those little pieces of things, like being able to do, you know, something over here and, you know, something else over here. And it really sounds like, you know, you exactly said it, that you're really, you know, staying on top of things, to kind of make sure that you do reduce that risk, of,
absolutely,
you know, any kind of recurrence in terms of breast cancer or the development or of something else.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And it's amazing how linked they are together and how, you know, how linked, when you know you've got that BRCA piece going on, how linked it is to other areas and things you didn't necessarily realize.
Absolutely. So, I agree. I have the same mutation, so I get it. And it definitely, you know, you do one thing hoping that it's going to take care of that. And then you do another thing hoping that it's going to take care of that next thing. But then there are still other possibilities that exist.
Yes.
So it's never perfect. And it really is about staying on top of things and really, you know, advocating for yourself and making sure that you're getting the things done that you need to have done, so that you have that peace, I guess, to be able to just go and live.
Well, and I think that's it. I think it's catching before it becomes something is kind of what my mentality, I guess, always has been, because we went into the mammogram early and everything, and I've just kind of always been let's get it before it becomes something. Same with changing out the implants. Let's get it and get them out of there before I don't want to wake up one morning and have one be 2 cup sizes bigger than the other, and then it's an emergency situation.
Right.
And with three little kids, I've got to be able to plan it out. I've got to be able to plan it out, and I've got to be able to not anything I can do so that it's not me being in a state of urgency.
Yeah.
And being able to keep that calm in the house. And you know, we had to schedule, even just getting them changed out, I had to have my, you know, we had to see if my in-laws could come down and help with the boys, because they were all in school. Could they come down and help get them to school? And they were here for 3 weeks helping us, at that point in time. So we were lucky that we, you know, we could schedule things and get everybody in play, because we don't have the support system down here in North Carolina that we had in Pennsylvania with friends and such.
Right. Yeah. And it does. So, I mean, it really does take a lot of coordination and figuring things out. And, you know, just adding in on top of just general life, 3 boys that you also have to take care of. I can only imagine that, you know, that can definitely be difficult. So
it adds a little spice to things.
I'm sure it does. Well, I want to say thank you so much for being a part of this, for sharing your story. I always feel like it's really important for people to hear the different stories that take place behind that pink ribbon, because not everybody's journey is exactly the same. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me to join you tonight. I really appreciate it.
For sure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.